Welcome to the Continuous Delivery Podcast. My name is Zarar.
I'm Stacy.
I'm Kino.
I'm Chubba.
And I'm Cheesy. So when Kent Beck introduced extreme programming through his book, he stated that we should embrace change. There are many that believe we've actually moved beyond that now to we are at a place where we need to embrace chaos. The idea is that chaos helps us get in a position where we have to create new ideas, new ways of thinking. And a lot of folks believe that it's the ideal way to deliver world-class products. That is our topic today. Zarar, what are your thoughts?
Well, when we were talking pregame and you were describing chaos to me, I interpret it as a removal of assumed constraints. So things that you have maybe taken for granted or you have always taken to be the truth and to the point that you never challenge them, those constraints are taken away. And now you are, now you live in a context which you have not seen before because all these things that you assume were there are no longer there. An example might be helpful. Say, for example, if you are on a team which does something as harmless as a product owner review before you ship to production. You review your story with a product owner before you ship to production. If you take that concept away and you go, you no longer require product owner approval to send a story to production, what are the implications of that to the team, and are they healthy? Does that create opportunities for them to learn more? The example that I have given is fairly innocuous, but if you extend that further, I would imagine there's many more possibilities.
So Zarar, that doesn't sound like chaos to me. Let me take it a step further. Assume that you don't have teams any longer. Assume that there's no such thing as a team, and that every day or every few days, you might be working with a different group of people.
So when Zarar and Cheesy was talking about chaos, the first thing came to my mind is actually Taleb and Antifragile, and I'm going to explain this a little bit. So Taleb is the author of a few books that talks a little bit about the possibilities that in markets you have sometimes he calls them black swan events. And when these events happen, then they have the potential to wipe out a very large amount of participants in the market. Now when I hear chaos, this is the first thing that comes to my mind. And as Zarar mentioned, we did this pregame discussion. The question was, how can you prepare your organization for these kind of events? And when Cheesy talks about chaos, this is one of those things, is that if you could be prepared somewhat for these events by, for example, what Cheesy mentioned, maintaining chaos in your organization, that you are constantly ready for this black swan event or these very big events. Think back 1 year about COVID. So for me, when I think of chaos, is usually the market, is usually outside forces that are outside of the team, because I would think that teams naturally would strive to become more stable, would strive towards at least whatever is within their control to be less chaotic. But I can see Cheesy is shaking his head. So and I have Hino here. Hino, what do you have to add?
So I agree with you that teams would naturally tend towards stability. But it doesn't mean that they have to, right? So the example that Cheesy was given even before related to what if you have no teams whatsoever, I believe that is actually a choice of the organization that is working. And that might be for very good reasons. The ones that you're talking about, the triggers that you're talking about, Chaba, are indeed external triggers that require you as a team, as an organization, as a business, to ensure that you can actually respond quickly to those particular situations. And it's really that response when you organize yourself around change and you consider change to be constant and always be there and continuously need to reassess how you're working and seeing if you're set up for success, if you're doing that, then you will be in a position where you'll have to change quite often, right? Now, some teams, and this is the point that I think Jeezy was referring to, is that you might actually strive to bring to have that chaos at all times and to force your teams to reinvent themselves, right? And I'll come back later on with a couple of terms that are used in the Toyota production system as well, or Toyota that same strategy is actually used to drive teams out of their comfort zone. So Cheesy.
Yeah, first of all, I want to just challenge something that you said, you know, where you said teams will try to go out of chaos towards stability. But I don't think stability and chaos are opposites. I don't think they're that at all. In fact, you could be very stable if you're constantly in chaos, you know, and that could become your new stability. So I think back to the very first example I heard of this, where Fred George was running some development many, many years ago, where there was no such thing as teams. What they would do is they would reform almost every day teams, you know, and constantly refocus on what was going on today, you know, and so that's some form of chaos. But I think it also goes well beyond just the idea of forming teams as well. I think it also goes to this idea of not having a roadmap, of not having features that we're delivering, of not having, you know, budgeting, even not having all of these things that we have, but instead create an organization that is dynamic enough that it can constantly react to whatever is happening right now. So throw methodologies aside, have the incredibly, incredibly lightweight methodology, but have one such that people can react to what they see going on. And the classic example of this is what you might see in a hospital emergency room, where there is no script. There is no, you know, standard procedure per se. What there is a group of highly trained people who are constantly watching and knowing and understanding what's going on and constantly reacting to what they see.
Chaos from whose perspective, right? So who's looking at this and seeing chaos? Because I know who I am, and I have some semblance of who you are. And I know when we walk into a situation to some external observer that looks chaotic, we are likely to find where we're going to add value and work together. So tell me, chaos from whose perspective?
What Cheesy was referring to there was we're setting ourselves up in a way without squads, without backlogs, without all of the standard things that you would expect in an organized environment. And from the outside, it might look like chaos. I don't consider that chaos either. If people feel comfortable working that way, they know what they do, they know what their goal is, they know how to approach this. In the morning, they come together, they figure out what they're going to work on today, they build a team or bring together a couple of folks to work on a specific topic. Maybe at noon, they come together again and work on something else. Why not, right? There is no reason. If they feel comfortable in that, that's their stable system, right? Still, when you look at it from a systems theory perspective, then you will a system will always navigate towards or will always go towards stability. That doesn't mean that it looks stable from the outside, especially not if you compare it to standard practices like the ones that you mentioned, Stacey.
I don't know. I'm a bit on the fence on this because I'm hearing various things from you guys, but I'm wary about the artificiality of it. I know this is not necessarily an English word, but are we trying to create this environment artificially, or is this environment just like, because what Cheesy described, those people who work in the emergency, they don't create that chaos. They don't create that environment. It's just, it's almost like that's the environment, right? And I'm not necessarily buying the fact that a development team is, like, all development teams created equal, right? So they are not, and that's why I'm not sure where like which direction are we trying to go here? Are we trying to say that teams should be striving to create this chaotic environment, or like that's why? Can you guys just explain this a little bit, because this is where I'm getting confused.
when you look at an emergency room in a hospital, it's not that we want to recreate emergency rooms, but when you look at the behaviors that people expose, you can learn from that. And there are some benefits to knowing how to handle an emergency room situation. Now, when you, I promised that I would bring a couple of terms up from the Toyota production system. Most people are very familiar with the term Kaizen, which basically is continuous improvement, small improvements and continuously doing this. And you can do this by a couple of percentages every single year and so forth. But Toyota had a practice. I do not know if they still have it today, but they had a practice a while ago that was called Kaikaku. And Kaikaku basically means radical change. And they introduced that specifically to create chaos, to specifically to create a wrench or to throw a wrench in the mix, so that people would need to come together, think differently, because the previous ways of working would not handle that situation. That is an kind of feeding ground or a ground for innovation. And that's where chaos becomes a tool and becomes something that you can strive towards in order to make people think differently and in order to get out of that rut of just doing the same thing over and over and over again, because it happens to work.
So the way that we work today, a lot of folks 20 years ago would think that it's complete chaos, but we know that it's not. We know that it's incredibly ordered and incredibly structured and very, very safe. But there are a lot of folks right now who are trying to say what is next, you know, and they're, a lot of their thinking is that we need to introduce chaos into the system in order to get that. Or I'll even say that there are those that believe that it's really impossible to have significant innovation without chaos. And so they're promoting this idea that if you want to work in an environment where you want a lot of innovation, where you want, you know, not your standard type of development, here's my roadmap, here's what I need to do, but where you really, really want innovation, the only way to truly do that is to create an environment where chaos becomes the norm. And over time, if the norm is chaos, it no longer feels like chaos. Just like to us, continuous delivery doesn't feel like chaos, whereas to somebody who maybe hasn't done it before, they would say, for sure, this is chaos. So again, the idea or the goal here is to create an environment where our very nature is to start to think out of the box, to start to think of very, very different ways of doing what we do.
I really love that. If I think about chaos, I think if I want to bring a little order or get something done, then it's this form of adversity. I have to overcome chaos somewhere to do something. And, you know, isn't through adversity where humans shine? You know, in these fields where so often we're commoditized and stuck in these little boxes. And if our goal with Agile is to release our humanity, you know, as kind of that special ability to solve problems, be innovative, isn't that really what we're trying to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's actually what all of you guys mentioned. And this is where I would like to now bring in a little bit what I mentioned the very, very beginning about Taleb at Antifragile. So pretty much his analogy, what he says is that for example, a human body is a good example, that if you exercise the human body, if you exercise your bones and your muscles, by that strain that you put on your body, will become stronger. Right. And that's pretty much what he's talking about when you say that, and Hino's example of throwing in that chaos, so forcing that exercise on the organization to react, hence the organization will become stronger to be able to adapt and react when a very big event happens, right? So that's why he coins the term antifragile, because what he's saying is that if you just do the same thing again and again and again and you become complacent, then you are fragile. And that's I think we are pretty much talking about the same thing. I feel, especially the way Hino and Cheesy described that introducing of that chaos.
Yeah, I can buy that one. I think I've come around to this topic after Cheesy's initial description of what it is. How often do we see like reorgs happen in organization where you have every few years, you have this massive change where a ton of people move under this person and you see a reorg happen and that results in a lot of chaos and it takes a lot of time for people to get used to the new things. And maybe they come out of it better. Maybe they come out of it worse. Who really knows? And the way I interpret this idea is that maybe instead of delaying that reorg until you absolutely hit the limits and definitely need to reorg, you kind of make it a habit or a practice where you constantly introduce these injections of change where your body or your organization may react in some weird ways. But as Chaba said, it does become more healthy or it becomes less fragile so that there's no need for these giant changes. If you go back to like continuous delivery principles, it's basically to me saying, don't wait for the big change, introduce small changes into your org structure continuously so that you're more resilient.
So we have a couple of ideas of chaos that are gaining a lot of popularity, or at least that a lot of people are talking about. One that we mentioned a little while ago, which was the radical reteaming or the whole reteaming idea. And in a way, that's sort of chaotic. There also is the sociocracy, right, where, you don't have an org structure, and there's been a lot of different companies that have gone down that route, some that have had success, some that haven't. I'm not sure if you guys have heard about the Bossa Nova work, or a lot of the Bossa Nova things that are going on in Europe where they're combining beyond budgeting, open space, sociocracy, and agile to kind of create, again, these company containers, if you will, that are designed around chaos and constant reevaluation and rework. Where the idea is that we constantly react to what is happening right now. So there is no set structure. There is no set plan. It's all about constant reaction.
Yeah. So can I challenge you guys a little bit? Because we all worked with very large organizations, very large clients who have very, very rigid, for lack of a better term, structures. So what would be your advice or your ideas for these large organizations? How could they practice some of it in knowing the politics, knowing what's going on in these big places? What are your ideas?
I think so. There are some very approachable ways to leverage chaos. Even if you think of something as simple as brainstorming, I'll use event storming. I invite a bunch of different job functions into a room. I say, what are all these events that we deal with all the time? And everybody starts writing and putting stickies up, and there's no structure to it, but each individual knows their own domain. And together we organize that chaos into something that becomes useful. But it's a little more approachable than like saying, well, let's jumble up your org a little, right?
Well, when I think about chaos, I'm immediately going back to the Ganeffin model, and even though that might take us in somewhat of a, I mean, this might be a podcast that spans over three episodes. So when you look at the Ganeffin model, and you go and look it up, I'm not going to explain the whole thing to you, but a lot of organizations are stuck in a complicated domain where they believe that every single problem can be solved by analysis. And really, the very first step, I believe, to take large organizations is to take them to the complex domain, where we start thinking about, okay, so how can we learn from experimentation? How can we put something out there without necessarily knowing how people are going to respond? How can we learn from those responses? Those responses might be to the functionality that we offer to our customers. It might be to the new practices that we introduce, and how do our developers, how do our everyone on the squad, everyone in the organization, how do they respond to that? And but still, you can learn from those practices. And only when you get there, then it kind of makes sense to push them into a chaos and say, like, okay, let's take those things away as well. And let's see how you can handle those situations to potentially come out with even more innovation, right? So the Kinefin model, I use it mostly to understand what strategies to use based on the model or the system that we're working with. Obvious being, so obvious being best practices, complicated being analysis, complex being experimentation, and chaos being probing, right? And
so to come back to Chaba's original question, though, perhaps it's not possible. Perhaps these large organizations, because of the process that they have, they can never truly be innovative. If you read a lot of it, that a lot of what's being written about these days in Lean Startup, and they when they talk about this idea, they talk about it's not possible to truly have an innovative organization inside of a large company, and that if you want to do it, you have to basically take it out. You have to kind of find a way to get it out of the company and make it somehow isolated, take it away. There's a whole movement around exponential organizations where they're talking about how do you build organizations that back to what you were talking about, Chaba, that completely change an industry, or there's the blue ocean idea, right? So that just completely turn an industry on its side. And if you read very much about the whole exponential company movement, the whole idea there is that you want to create chaos, and through that chaos, create multipliers. So anyway, I don't know that it is possible to truly create world-class innovation inside of these companies. I've even seen large companies that have created an innovation group inside of their walls. And as long as they don't free them, as long as they still try to impose structure, they never really achieve true innovation.
I'd really like to come back to some stuff that Hino was getting at, you know, when you think about Kinefin and you think about the perspective, from whose perspective is this chaos? You know, the human brain has this amazing ability to perceive patterns where none may exist, right? And the whole foundation behind like Rorschach tests or you name it, this is a thing that happens. And when you think about Kinefin, you think about, you know, when we're not paying attention, when we lose touch with what is actually happening in the system, this is when things fall off the shelf into the disorder space all on its own. We perceived a certain situation, but our perception was not quite accurate. And sometimes we have to like adjust how we approach things to discover what is actually happening there. You know, Dave specifically calls Kinefin a sense-making framework. You know, we don't go to a certain thing. It's a way to make sense of what's happening around us.
I think it was Chaba who goes, well, how do you create this chaos in large organizations? You know, Stacy also mentioned, well, chaos from whose perspective? And then Cheesy sort of laughed at me when I said at the start that, you know, maybe the product owner doesn't have to review stories. So I think the product owner not reviewing stories and sending it to production without them looking at it is probably very chaotic from that team's perspective. And maybe that's the level of change that causes chaos on that team. And maybe that's all it takes for that team to discover something new. So chaos doesn't necessarily have to be a situation where everything's on fire and we're rediscovering, you know, how to, you know, commit code, you know, but maybe it could be something a lot smaller.
One of the podcasts, I'm sorry, I don't remember who mentioned this, about an exercise where they describe a flow or process. It could be the team, it could be product. And they say, what if we take away something? Right. And the example in that podcast was you have a restaurant And then what if we take away, let's say there are no menus, or there are no waiters, or there are no chairs, or no just pretty much like you start taking away these very, very, very assumed and fundamental things when it comes to a process. Or, for example, you mentioned there are product owner reviewing stories, right? Like, let's say you take that away. And it was interesting to imagine that world with that thing missing, right? And that was interesting facilitation technique to kind of spark that in a way. This is more like a theoretical chaos, because you are not actually didn't actually do it yet. It's almost just imagining how that world would look like. But this is one potential idea that teams could do for their customers, clients, their own process, that would introduce somewhat in a more controlled or safer way that chaos to force that this innovation.
I think what you're kind of referring to is those constraints that Zarar was talking about at the very beginning of our podcast. And that is, what if you take away some of those constraints? What if you take away some of these assumptions and challenge them? And that is exactly what brings that innovation, right?
And that concludes this edition of the Continuous Delivery Podcast. Goodbye.